Number 96, IDT Corporation against Tyco Group.
Okay, please, the court, Tom Dewey.
Counsel, do you want to reserve time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, Justice Graffio. In addition to placing these parties in a commercially impossible position, the appellate division decision directly conflicts with well-established New York law in multiple respects.
Well, this settlement agreement was, what, 14 years ago? Correct?
Exactly, Your Honor.
So you're back. We're back again looking at this case?
Rather like Groundhog Day, Your Honor.
Since we affirmed the appellate division in 2009,
yeah.
Wasn't there an expectation that the parties were going to negotiate something here and settle this case?
Well, Your Honor, that's what we've been trying to do. And I think that the error...
I thought your posture was that we decided that you had no further obligations.
That is absolutely our posture, Your Honor. And I think you get there no matter what doctrinal lens you use. This court saw the case as a condition case, unlike the parties or the prior appellate division panel. The court held that the handover of capacity was subject to the condition of further negotiations. The court also held that that condition had not been satisfied. To use the court's precise words, never became enforceable. And the court must have concluded that Tyco was not responsible for the non-fulfillment of that condition.
So you're saying, counsel, that you were better off not engaging in negotiations after the Court of Appeals decision, original decision here? If you had just not done anything, you'd be better off?
Well, it's the triumph of hope over experience, Your Honor. We actually do want to get them the capacity, and it's really extraordinary to me that we're frankly being in the position of in the way the First Department looked at it, being criticized for doing something that it was our position we had no legal obligation to do.
But the fact that our court in 2009 determined that summary judgment wasn't warranted because the condition hadn't been met, does that mean that Tyco was absolved of all responsibility to continue with good faith negotiations?
It means that after negotiating on and on for a period of over 3.5 years, both within the context of the settlement agreement and at their request outside of the context of the settlement agreement, our obligation to negotiate had been discharged.
How do we know that? I have this picture that this case is going to go on and on, so that at some point when people were arguing about whether there's a team of horses that they have to be bought, and we're now in the automobile age. I mean, technology is going to overtake this case, it just seemed to me.
And that's an important point, Judge Pigott. To a certain extent, it already has, because these IRUs aren't really out there. But let me see if
well,
I can
my question, that was just kind of a preamble to my question. An IRU, we have no clue what that is. I mean, it kind of sounds like what it is. You seem to be saying, we offered them the standard, here's our deed, signed on the bottom, happy trails. And they're saying, no, there's more to this IRU than what you're saying in your standard one. And we want certain bells and whistles or something. And I don't know how we're supposed to figure that out.
Okay, I think the court already figured it out, with great respect, Judge Pigott. When you have a condition...
What I vote for. Yeah,
when you have a condition, the condition is not satisfied, without fault of the alleged breaching party, in this case Tyco, it is black-letter law that the conditional duty is discharged.
So what's the condition that you're saying makes this impossible to resolve?
Well, there again, I think the appellate division looked at it the wrong way.
Is it the availability of the capacity? Is that what you're talking
about? The condition was the negotiations. We can't give them the IRU.
So you're basically arguing that because you're at impasse, you're discharged of any further duties. You've reached the impasse. There's no way to resolve this. We cannot reach a negotiated posture where we come to an agreement on certain terms that were outstanding, the condition proceedings, as you're calling it.
Right.
Therefore, we can all walk away from the table. That sounds to me like your argument. Am I misunderstanding?
No, I think that's right, Judge Rivera. And the only
okay, so at what point, what is our role in figuring out whether or not you're correct in this conclusion that you are at impasse and that there's really nothing left to negotiate?
Well, I think that our fundamental point is that the court already made that conclusion. In other words, if you have a condition that's not satisfied without fault of the party being charged, obligation is discharged.
We said in 2009 the negotiations finally came to an end in March 2004. That's what you're referring to, essentially?
That round of negotiations, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it technically, is that binding? That is, did we adjudicate that the negotiations were at an end, or is that just a sort of an incidental fact that we recited in our opinion?
I think you adjudicated that Tyco had discharged its obligations.
We certainly adjudicated that Tyco was not at fault
right.
At that stage. Did we adjudicate whether there was a continuing obligation or not?
I believe you did by finding that a condition precedent had not been satisfied without fault of title.
If we disagree with you on that premise,
yep.
Is there still some claim for money damages here then?
If you
can't provide the IRU, is there, I thought that more recently the negotiations have involved a discussion of monetary damage as opposed to IRUs.
We've negotiated for close to a decade inside the framework of the settlement agreement and at their request outside the framework of the settlement agreement. And the law both of condition but also of the duty to negotiate is very, very clear that if, after good faith negotiations, a final agreement is reached without fault of either party. Thank you very much. With no fault of either party, the duty to negotiate has been discharged. And I think this points up the danger of the appellate division's decision.
But in part, I think you're arguing it might not be your fault to have reached an agreement, but it's their fault to have reached an agreement.
Well, I think that what the duty to negotiate cases say is you have to make the judgment, as we think this Court made the judgment, that the positions we took were good faith positions and that we're not at fault
reaching. From your point of view, it doesn't matter whether they were at fault or not, as long as you weren't.
No, that's exactly right, Judge Smith. And the danger, as I was saying, of leaving the appellate division decision uncorrected is that you'll have the law out there saying if there's no expiration date, you have to
but aren't you only
forever.
But aren't you only not at fault if the positions they take are unreasonable? Because otherwise, if they're reasonable, then you would be at fault for not accepting
what was
the position,
issue
right?
In the prior litigation are the same issues, which goes to our preclusion arguments, that came up the last time around. They said, your decommissioning provision is a violation of the settlement agreement. We said, no, it's not. This Court found we didn't breach our obligations. They only come around again to say, your decommissioning provision, it's a violation of the settlement.
Following up on Judge Rivera's question, is it possible to have a case where neither party is unreasonable and yet the negotiations come to an end and nobody can sue anybody?
Absolutely right, Your Honor. If you look at the teacher's case of Judge LaValle's, which is one of the seminal duty to negotiate case, he hypothesizes precisely that circumstance, where both parties take good faith positions, they happen not to agree, and therefore the negotiations end. And there are a bunch of cases we cite in our brief, Calf, teachers, and others, where that sort of fact pattern played out.
So what do you want us to say in this case? What are you asking us to declare?
I'm asking you to declare that this Court's opinion in the prior case ended the parties' obligations under the settlement agreement. Otherwise, we will be having to negotiate for the entire 15-year term of the IRU.
Does that mean that that your standard IRU becomes effective?
I'm sorry, Judge Piggott, I don't follow.
Well, they're entitled to this IRU because of the settlement of all the other claims, right?
That's one of the things that they were entitled to.
Right,
but you're saying not anymore.
No, because we negotiated over a period of years. We were unable to resolve it.
So you take, maybe I'm wrong, but correct me. I think you're taking the position that you entered a settlement, but embedded in the settlement was the risk that you'd reach impasse. And you gave up that litigation.
That's exactly right, Judge.
With this risk in mind.
Anytime you have a duty to negotiate, you're assuming the risk that you're unable to actually reach a final agreement.
But wasn't part of that settlement offer that you made that they would have this IRU for 15 years?
Well, it certainly was the case that we had to negotiate, as this Court held, to document the IRU and all the other agreements. There's no question we had to negotiate to reach that.
That's on the table. You say they're being unreasonable and not accepting it.
Yeah. Well, what we're saying is we negotiated for 3 years.
And now you're saying that there's a statute of limitations or some limitation on how long you have to negotiate, and that has been passed, and they now have blown the opportunity to get an IRU for 15 years for free.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the conclusion of the prior appellate division decision, the last paragraph of this Court's decision, it's very clear that after years of negotiations inside the framework of the settlement agreement, outside the settlement of the framework of the settlement decision, there's no agreement. And at some point, the duty to negotiate has to be discharged. It has to be within a reasonable time, and the last time I checked, 3+ years, much not to speak of 10 years, was a reasonable time to finalize a contract. Reserve the balance of my time.
Counsel.
May it please the Court, Hillel Parnas for respondents. Let me just begin with where Mr. Dewey ended. Five justices of the appellate division disagreed with Mr. Dewey when he said that they had discharged Tyco.
That's why he's taking an appeal.
I'm sorry?
He's taking an appeal. Yeah.
Right, so he's taking an appeal.
So
yes,
what are you asking us to declare? He's explained what he wants us to do. What do you want us to do?
So we're here on a motion to dismiss, the standard being, did we have substantial pleadings, assuming the facts are assumed to be in our favor? Justice Schweitzer, in his decision, it turned on one point, the words of your decision saying that you and the appellate division had discharged Tyco. The justices said that was error, that there's nothing in the record to suggest that discharge was brought up or discussed or concluded.
Well, what about our statement? I don't know whether it's a finding or a holding or just a comment. The negotiations finally came to an end in March 2004. First of all, is that right or wrong?
Does it say that or not?
I'm quoting. I know it says it. Were we right or wrong when we said
it? It does say that, and that is true because IDT then sued. They ended.
Well, the negotiations finally, the word finally is in there, came to an end in March 2004.
Okay. Well, we actually, nobody has focused on those words up until now, but I'm happy to focus on them. I think it's a recitation of facts that those negotiations had gone on for a few years. Perhaps you were saying finally to say that.
If it's a fact, and if it's also a fact or a law or something, that Tyco was at that point not at fault, because that we did hold that, then how can the duty of good faith negotiation continue?
Well, again, as we've laid out in our papers, Your Honor, this Court's opinion and the appellate division's opinion in 2009 and 2008 turned on the question of whether Tyco had insisted on its terms and conditions or whether it merely proposed them. That was argued here. You and Mr. Dewey had an exchange about it in 2009.
I think I'm kind of confused.
Yes.
I thought your posture was that you were arguing they were not negotiating in good faith after our 2009 decision.
Okay, so
am I right or wrong about that?
You're correct. I was answering a different question. I apologize. In the first lawsuit and in the second lawsuit, in both situations, IDT claimed that Tyco was not negotiating in good faith under different factual circumstances. In the first case, there were different arguments about what the agreement required or didn't require. You may recall there was a Type 1, Type 2 discussion. Mm-hmm. That's well behind us. We now understand it's a condition precedent contract. The contract requires not just the standard agreements, but it's the standard agreements not inconsistent with the terms of the settlement agreement.
But does the contract require you to negotiate forever?
It does not, Your Honor.
As Judge Rivera kept asking, in principle, is it right that the parties can reach an impasse and their obligations will be over?
In principle, that would be a highly...
What in this record tells us that that did not happen?
What in this record tells us that did not happen? Well, I actually would ask the question the other way. Nothing in the record tells us that it did happen.
You say it's 14 years, so how much longer does this go on?
Well, let's remove 11 of those since we've been in front of the various courts. As the appellate division said just now in 2012, 11 of those 14 years were just the course of litigation.
Well, is that the law? You're doing negotiation in good faith. You can bring a lawsuit which ultimately gets thrown out, saying that they were not in good faith and the court ultimately holds you wrong, and you say, okay, we took those 11 years off, now start again?
On the facts of this case, Your Honor, what happened here, IDT sued Tyco in 2004, taking the position, among others, that Tyco had advanced inconsistent positions with the settlement agreement. What the appellate division said in 2008 and what you said in 2009 was that Tyco had merely proposed its positions without reaching the issue. And the appellate division said this very clearly in 2012, that they didn't reach the issue and you didn't reach the issue, in their view. You never reached the issues of the substance of the inconsistencies. You did not get to them because your decisions turned, their decision and yours, turned on whether Tyco had insisted
but
or merely proposed.
You may have had a perfectly decent lawsuit in 2004, made a perfectly reasonable case, although you lost it. People lose cases. You decided to walk away from the table and sue, didn't you?
In 2004, yes, yeah. After trying.
What is it really reasonable to say you can walk away from the table, sue, spend 11 years, it really isn't 11 yet, but it's been a long time, spend X years suing, lose the lawsuit and say, okay, there goes that lawsuit, let's go back to the table?
Without the characterization Your Honor just laid upon it, respectfully, yes, we think that's a reasonable approach. We sued thinking that Tyco had breached the contract. What your decision turned on and the appellate division's decision turned on in 2009 and 2008 was that Tyco had merely proposed positions, even though the parties had argued.
So you're saying now it's very clear that they're saying we're not going to propose anything different than we did in 2001 through 4. And so now you're saying they've actually breached the contract?
Actually, not entirely, Your Honor. So in 2009, you instructed us, after the appellate division instructed us, that merely proposing terms is not enough to give rise to a breach. And that's where your decision ended. We went back to the table with that roadmap, as I call it in my briefs. The roadmap was keep going until somebody's insisting. The record is incomplete because we're at a motion.
Does that mean keep going until someone's unreasonable?
That means keep going until someone is insisting on their position and won't budge from their position.
So you don't want us to claim that they're now in breach?
I would love it if
it's still premature to do that?
I don't think you have – I think you could do that, but I don't think you have the right record in front of you.
Tell me what's left for the two of you to negotiate, because they can't offer you an IRU anymore, right?
Well, that –
capacity isn't there.
Oh, no, that's not true, Your Honor. That's not true at all.
Tell us what it is you would like to negotiate.
I must correct one point that Judge Abdeslam just said. The inconsistencies the second time around are different than the inconsistencies the first time around. You can see it at record page 307, but I don't think we need to go there today. I think it's a factual discussion that's best left to the trial court, which I don't think should be before you today. But if you look at record 307, as opposed to record 296 that Mr. Dewey has referenced, in record 307, you see one of the major inconsistencies was they had sold their network. Tyco sold their network to an Indian company called BSNL. And I believe it's item number 2.
Right. So how can they offer you an IRU if they don't own it anymore?
They claim that in their agreement with BSNL, they reserved the right for us to keep using the network's still there. The capacity is still there. They claim they reserved the right for us to use it. In the second round of negotiations.
Suppose they sold it without reserving it. In the middle of the lawsuit, between the appellate division and the Court of Appeals, you say that even though you brought a lawsuit that we later determined not to be a meritorious lawsuit, you're saying they had to hang on to the capacity in case you wanted to come back to the table?
Well, I think they actually agree with that point, Your Honor. That's why they reserved it. I suppose they could have put money aside.
I thought in the more recent negotiations you were asking for monetary damage. As opposed to access.
No, the negotiations all the way through October, and there may have been references to money here and there, but if you read them all the way through the final emails, right, and if you read our complaint through paragraph 50, which we talk about the final meeting.
Why don't you answer my previous question, which is what's left to negotiate? What are you asking from them? Just humor us. Give us some
idea. Negotiation before we sued?
If we agree with you. No, now. If we agree with you, what's left to negotiate? What are you asking for?
If you agree with us, we are back in front of the Supreme Court seeking money damages for their breach. The Supreme Court will have to determine.
So it is monetary damage. That's what I.
Yes. No, we're not seeking. I'm sorry. You say that they
have now walked away from the table.
We say that they have insisted, which was the standard you gave us in 2009. Keep negotiating until someone insists. If they insist,
Let's suppose you prevail here, and you do exactly what you said. We go back to Supreme Court, 2015, 2016, you have a trial, and you lose. And they say that their positions were not all that unreasonable. Do you call them up and say, okay, let's keep negotiating, let's do the 2017 round?
I hope we don't have to do that, Your Honor. But
you would have a right to do that.
Well, I was thinking about that question, Your Honor. I think that in every case, including the 19 cases that they cited on conditions precedent, every case turns on the facts. Their cases do not stand for the proposition that Mr.
What ends this case? What could conceivably happen that ends this case?
Well, what could this case?
Obviously, if we agree with your adversary, that ends this case.
Well, if you agree with my adversary,
in your mind,
on discharge.
If we agree with you, what ends this case?
If you agree with me, we go back to the Supreme Court. We have very limited factual discovery, very limited expert discovery on the value of the capacity, and the Supreme Court will decide, did Tyco insist on his positions? And if so, were those positions inconsistent, which is the second question that nobody got to the first time around, except Justice Ramos, who ruled for us the first time.
Is there any answer to Judge Graffio's question other than that eventually you have to win a lawsuit?
No. I think that if we're in front of the Supreme Court, Tyco is certainly able to raise the question of discharge.
It can come out anyway. You come in front of the Supreme Court. What other than a victory for you will end this negotiation? The negotiation going to go on to the 22nd century?
Well, again, Your Honor, you're talking about in your hypothetical that
can they hand you a check?
It might depend on the size, Your Honor.
Well, I thought you made an offer. They didn't want to give you the whatever it was, $33 million. I can't even remember anymore.
That was a number of years ago. I
guess now you want a lot more.
Well, it was a number of years ago. It was a number of years ago.
If I'm following you right, what's going on here is they want something, or they refuse to give you what you want. You say that whatever they are putting on the table is in violation of the settlement agreement. And I take that your argument now is no one has ever decided this question of whether or not they are being reasonable. and that that's what's outstanding and has to be decided. That you're not at impasse because someone has to tell you or both of you that what they are requesting is or is not unreasonable and as you say, inconsistent with the settlement agreement. Until you get that decision, right, we cannot rule that there is an impasse or isn't an impasse, or some court cannot rule that way.
I partially agree with you, Your Honor, and I partially disagree.
That's good to hear. We'll see if I agree with you. Go ahead.
I partially agree. In the first, there were inconsistencies in the first round of negotiations. There were inconsistencies in the second round of negotiations. They are different inconsistencies. Okay. The big one being, okay. I was going to say to Judge Abdus-Salam before, the big one being item number two, that the provider now is VSNL. They removed themselves from the contract and put in VSNL. You don't have the drafts and you don't have the correspondence from the second round of negotiations. You have bits and pieces. You do not have the whole thing. You don't even have the draft.
The posture is there needs to be further fact-finding. Is that
we haven't even
before there's a determination of unreasonableness? Is
well,
that
yes. Again, Your Honor, we're at the motion to dismiss stage. We haven't even exchanged documents with each other
yet. You haven't even answered your 3211.
Correct. We haven't done any. They have answered after the appellate division reversed.
But your position, there can't be a determination on impasse because someone's got to resolve this question that you say is outstanding, whether or not what they demand is, as you say, inconsistent with the agreement.
Well, again, yes. And the first time around, you told us that nothing we put before you rose to the level of insisting on a final position. And so we went back to the table and kept pressing Tyco in documents that, frankly, you don't have because we haven't exchanged documents yet, over and over again in documents and in emails and in our complaint, in documents and meetings and in our complaint, Tyco, are you insisting on these positions or not? If you are insisting, we have to go to court. And Tyco kept not answering the question until we finally said it's not.
If we were to, I think, and they argue here, I guess, as an alternative argument, they say their positions in this that they've taken so far are perfectly reasonable. And if we were to agree with them and reverse and you lose the case again, then the next step is to go back to the negotiation and see if they see what you can do for another few years?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, we would want to go back to the table with the cloud of their discharge argument lifted. Our point of view, and I believe the appellate division agreed with us,
Cloudy, you could be at the negotiation table for a long time yet.
Well, but I do think, Your Honor, that just like the 19 cases they cited, some of which had a date certain. Ours doesn't have a date certain. Some of which had a date certain by which the condition precedent couldn't be fulfilled anymore. Ours doesn't have that. But in some of the other cases, very few of them talk about discharge. But when they do, it's a factual determination. And I think that if they went back to Justice Schweitzer or whoever the justice is the third time around, in your hypothetical, I hope there isn't a third time, Your Honor. In your hypothetical, if there was a third time around, they could go to a court and say, we want a ruling that we've been discharged. Here are the 19 cases that say that we've been discharged. Our facts line up with those facts. Here's the factual record. None of that's happened. They didn't do it the first time. The citations they give you in their brief are not correct citations.
Okay, counsel. We've gone well beyond your red light. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. At the risk of running afoul of the advocate witness rule, I was here the last time. And what you're hearing is a gross mischaracterization of the record in the prior case. They did indeed argue that the mere act of proposing a draft IRU that they claimed was inconsistent with the settlement agreement was a breach. Well, they did argue that. But they also argued that our insistence on many of these provisions was also a breach.
But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you settled this huge lawsuit way back when, and part of it was you were giving them something. All right, you're going to give them this IRU. And your argument seems to be, if we play rope-a-dope long enough, it'll disappear. Our obligation to give that consideration, which was part of this agreement, we're going to get rid of all of our claims and cross-claims and everything else, and you're going to give us an IRU free for 15 years. And somehow that's going to disappear because you just haven't, you said we've been reasonable and they haven't, and therefore we win. We don't have to pay what we were going to pay on that original agreement where we were giving them IRU for 15 years, right?
Judge Pigott, the supreme irony in this case is that they have breached the duty to negotiate in every way you actually can. They've walked away from the negotiating table. This is in the prior
record. Let's assume that you had a week to negotiate this thing way back in 2004, and the week was over. Somebody's going to evaluate the value of 15-year IRU and say, because you offered it, you have to pay that amount. It's either the 15 IRU or it's this amount.
And that's exactly why we're here. They don't want the IRU. They want a lawsuit. Because of the radical drop in the value of the capacity, they'd rather have a lawsuit.
You you've got to pay them.
Have the IRU.
My only point is, you're the one that's you're the payor in this thing. You're the one that made the offer of this thing of value, and you want to say because it's been so long for whoever you know, we win, and they want to say it's because you're saying they're delaying, and they're saying you're delaying, and I don't know why at a 32-11 we have to make that determination.
It's not because it's been so long. It's because we have tried, and this Court adjudicated that we in good faith took positions that they are now attempting to relitigate. The claim
but how did our Court ever examine, and do we even have the authority to examine the conditions that you put on the 15-year IRU?
You did, and you can. Decommissioning. Let's take decommissioning. This Court's opinion expressly references decommissioning. We said we want this decommissioning provision. They said that's inconsistent with the settlement agreement. This Court, noting the fact that they actually agreed to our provision, only to then claim it was a breach, clearly ruled that our proposal of that decommissioning provision couldn't be a breach when it found we didn't breach any of our obligations. There are really only two ways you can breach the duty to negotiate, if you think about it. You can walk away, which they've done five times and we never have, or you can insist on inconsistent terms. It was very clear in the prior record that we needed a decommissioning provision. They accepted it. This Court validated it, and we found ourselves sued again for the same provision. And you can go through the prior record and the current record, and they're the exact same issues, point by point by point. Some of them don't even pass the straight face.
It's a technical matter. The prior record is theoretical. I mean, I realize it's not printed here, but we can look at it, can't we?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Same lawsuit.
Same lawsuit.
Well, your adversary says the current record is incomplete, and we can't compare the prior record with the current record because they're saying there are now 10 different inconsistencies, and they're not fully discussed in the record because they don't think that they need to get there. That's premature.
Their complaint referenced in precise detail all the communications between counsel. We put those communications in the record. They can't have it both ways. They can't reference the communication and then say, well, the Court can't look at the substance of the communication.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.